Hey, this is Joe Hamilton, and today I'm sitting down with Bill Logan, who's the Communications Manager for Public Works for the city. And you've had a busy couple of weeks, huh?
Busy indeed, yes. It's hard to believe that here we're sitting midweek, the week after Irma, and we are just now beginning to see everybody finally get back toward whole, or at least toward some sense of normalcy.
Sure. So obviously, leading up to Irma, well, first, I think it's important that the sweet dulcet tones that are coming across the mic are born from many years of experience. You were, I guess, you were a meteorologist for...
I started out as a TV reporter in 1983. Been doing weather pretty much from that time on. Got my meteorology degree in 2012, but I've been doing weather for a long time, either out in the storm or in the studio pointing at the spaghetti plot saying, keep going west, keep going west, keep going west. This was a very interesting storm for me to sit in the Emergency Operations Center for the city of St. Petersburg and watch how a city prepares for the worst, prays for the best, and then deals with what happens.
Right.
It was very interesting.
And there were a couple sort of lanes that you had to deal with there. One is the preparation piece of it, and the, you know, we'll call it the actual logistics. And
It all started with sandbags. Tuesday after Labor Day. I mean, remember Labor Day weekend? Beautiful, wonderful weather. But we were constantly kind of looking at, you know, there might be this thing out in the tropics that we're going to keep an eye on. And by Tuesday at the mayor's cabinet meeting, the call was made to, let's turn on our sandbag centers. Mm-hmm. I know that this storm is not projected to even be in our neighborhood for another 7 days, but let's start this.
And you feel good about that decision, I bet.
It was borne out amazingly. I mean, I think all of last year, 2016, the city may have given out 25,000 sandbags from 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon when they decided to do it until 8 o'clock, and there were still people in line.
Wow.
And then so the next day they opened up more centers, and the next day they opened up more centers. So we had 6 sandbag centers operating from 7 in the morning until 7 at night until we ran out of bags. 152,000 bags were given out over a 3-day period. That exhausted the supply. It was unprecedented. So I think it was the combination of everybody having very fresh in their mind images of Harvey in Houston and Galveston in Texas. And we hadn't been hit for a long time here. And this was the one that pretty much came right down the chute of Project Phoenix, which was done about 10 years ago, to illustrate a worst case scenario of a hurricane hitting Tampa Bay.
Project Phoenix was a modeling effort?
It was a modeling effort that was done through a consortium of different weather services and planning organizations and stuff. It was eerily similar to a storm that kind of shot the gap between Cuba and Florida and then came right up the West Coast. And as recently as Sunday afternoon in the EOC, we were still going, oh no, this is coming right for us.
Right.
Because it hadn't yet made the turn. Once it did Sunday night and then went in through Naples and then came up through the center of the state, it didn't appear as though it was going to be as bad. But the hard part for us was that once winds got to 40 miles an hour, all the first responders, all the people that were there to help support the city through the storm had to shelter in place.
Right.
So when power went out, we lost power to all of the lift stations around the city, which helped to move the sewage to the sewage plants.
Right.
Because we couldn't get out to those locations where they lost power with generators, there was some very minor overflows at three locations. And due to a faulty sensor, we were putting water that was not quite disinfected enough into a holding tank until we could get to it and disinfect it more later with some more chlorine. And the sensor on that, it's like a 30-foot tank. The sensor kept showing that it was at 25 feet. But once our operator went outside and saw that there was water coming over the top of the tank, it was like, uh-oh, the sensor must be bad.
Sure.
And that was because the power went out. So we had like just very limited problems with our processes.
So a couple isolated incidents, but overall...
It worked.
It worked.
I mean, the millions of dollars that have been put into the infrastructure improvements, be them along, you know, with manholes and the sewer lines within the city, fixing them or fixing the plants to be able to treat more and dispose of more wastewater coming to the system. They worked. I've been just monitoring some of the other communities around Pinellas County, Hillsborough County, Polk County, all sorts of local municipalities have had a lot of spills, discharges, overflows that they're still working to quantify. The ones that happened here, we were very quick to estimate, you know, maybe a 3,000-gallon spill there, maybe 1,300 gallons there. And then the reclaimed water that spilled out of the holding tank was maybe 10,000 gallons total.
Right.
So this was the entire time. There are still communities now, especially down south, Collier County, they just took a huge hit on this thing. And sewage in the streets, I mean, raw sewage in the streets. We've sent some of our workers down to help with the cleanup there. It could have been a lot worse here.
Right.
We really, really did dodge a bullet.
Well, I think we moved a little out of the way, which made it easier to dodge the bullet, which is nice. So that's a credit to a plan put in action and really feeling some success from that plan. Right. So that's nice.
But to see a Category 5 storm come churning across the Caribbean like that and see it heading right toward, you know, the state, it's I think people took it seriously, and thankfully so. It's taken a while to get back. You know, I'm glad I don't work for Duke Power this week. They, I think, may have been overly optimistic in their promises, and people who didn't have power, they just clung to that, with all the hope they could have. Sometimes you just have to underpromise and overdeliver rather than the other way around. But, you know, all in all, they still had power back quicker than it was in 2004,
right,
when we had the problems with Francis and Gene and Charlie come through.
So during the, you know, on that Sunday afternoon, what is your hour by hour activity as you're receiving news from a variety of sources? And then what are you doing with it?
I couldn't fall asleep Sunday night. I mean, we the Water Resources headquarters building over off of 16th and 3rd is a Category 5 rated building. Right. So that's where all the infrastructure was, all the important people, you know, the mayor, cabinet members, my boss, police, fire, all the representatives were in there for the EOC. Mm-hmm. You know, here's what we're going to need to do is we're monitoring this. And we're all watching the storm track, the same as everybody else. It was different for me. Again, normally I'm out there either watching the storm or watching the track and pointing to it.
Right.
So I didn't get the information right away, but I could see that when this went inland at Naples. It was going to pull into the state, and that really saved us. That's where the intensity dropped. I mean, from a Category 4 to a Category 1 really fast. I think even officially, I think that the track may have shown that it was a Category 2 strength moving in through Highlands, Hardy, into parts of Polk and Hillsborough County, but I think it was maybe just barely a Category 1. Still, 75-mile-per-hour winds, that's still damage. A big deal.
Sure.
And it did do damage, but we didn't get the storm surge because of the way that it hit, and then the majority of the weather kept moving off to that right quadrant and up in toward North Florida. We were really spared. I think after the water got sucked out of the bay,
that was insane,
which we knew was going to happen. Yeah. It had so much lower because of that, that even when the storm surge came in, you know, people in Shore Acres, you know, they didn't even have water in the streets. It was as good a high tide we could have had at that time because of the timing of everything.
What was in the emergency operations center? What was that like being in there? And
everybody was holding their breath.
Yeah.
You cautiously said, I think this is weakening. It's not going to be as bad here.
Yeah.
But we couldn't tell.
Sure.
And when a storm hits in the middle of the night, if the power's still on, you're not able to see much. And we couldn't go out. We couldn't leave.
Right.
I took a quick walk around the building right at about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I was just like, it doesn't seem bad.
Right.
Then the next morning when I got up, and by 7 o'clock, the winds had reduced below that 40 mile an hour threshold where we could put some first responders out. I followed one of our Vector trucks out to a location where they had an alarm on a manhole. And the trees were down everywhere. So it was it was bad, but I didn't see what I had been seeing on the news. Which brings me to an interesting point.
It does indeed.
having been in the news for 30 years and watching specifically national coverage, you're never going to get a fair, I don't want to take somebody's marketing campaign, you're not going to get a real true impression of what's going on in that community unless you're watching coverage or involved in coverage by those who live in that community. Mm-hmm. Itinerant disaster coverage journalists will parachute in when a disaster is getting ready to come and do their chicken little reports. The sky is falling. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. And then when it starts to get better, they're off to the next disaster du jour.
Right.
And I can't fault them for that. That's their job. Mm-hmm. They go from whatever spot news is happening here to whatever spot news is happening there. And their job is to tell about the horrific events that are unfolding. I used to say, standing in front of whatever's blown up, burned down, shot, stabbed, flooded, or molested. That pretty much covers it. Hats off to the people here that I watched locally, not getting people upset, not saying this is terrible, remaining calm, remaining cautiously optimistic. And then as first light came out, they were able to see some of the stuff too. And I think appropriately reported on things with compassion and with a sense of community. And that's what you really need in something like this. You've got to have people who are your neighbors.
Yeah.
And who understand what it's like to drive down 4th Street when a lane gets closed and what happens to it. And they understand where you have to move around things because they're part of the community too. They got skin in the game.
Yeah. And it's amazing how in our camp and in our circle was Dennis Phillips, right? And I literally think that half of my friends wives were ready to leave them for Dennis Phillips. But, you know, because he, you know, he was just the love that, you know, he stood up there and immediately became a, you know, an emotional support beacon versus just a guy talking about a path of a storm. And, you know, his people hung on. He had a rule number 7 or something, will stay calm or whatever. And
don't freak out until I tell you to. And I'm not telling you to. Yeah, I worked with Dennis for the past 12 years until I came to the city a year ago. And in a time of crisis, in a time of, as we would say, disruptive weather, he was the best. I mean, about 15, 16 months ago, some tornadoes that came through Manatee County real early in the morning. He drove in from his house, Palm Harbor, the TV station's over by Raymond James Stadium. He drove in, even though I was there on shift, just to make sure that we would have the right coverage because he feels that passionate about protecting people. And, you know, being on TV, part of its shtick, part of its, you know, performance aspect of things, but he does care.
Yeah.
And I think ever since Hurricane Charlie and he saw that initial jog to the right when it started to make landfall, and he called that before anybody else, and yeah, okay, it's a point of pride and he can, you know, hearken back to that. But he knows this area, and he knows the way weather, you know, happens here. Paul Delgado's the same way.
Sure.
Steve Jervey's the same way.
Yep.
Mike Clay over at Bay News 9 is the same way. I mean, these are people who have been in this community for a while, and they're invested here, and they know the people, and they know what's going to be important for their neighbors to hear.
How much of that is discussed, right? So, you know, you can talk about what you think the storm's going to do, go left, go right. But then after you figure that out, are there discussions about...
Oh, there always is. I mean, just...
You know, you could start a panic that results in some serious damage if you don't say exactly the right thing.
Think back to Saturday and Sunday and you and your friends talking about spaghetti models. Do you have a meteorological background at all? Have you discovered or, you know, looked into numeric weather predictions and the biases and so? I mean, but everybody at that point, because you knew a little bit more and you were learning a little bit more and you listened to this guy and you talked to that person, you became somewhat of an amateur meteorologist yourself. A meteorologist is only someone who studies weather.
Right.
A forecaster is someone who makes an educated guess. That's all they do. But the longer you live in an area and the more you, oh yeah, that's the same thing that happened like 2 years ago, same sort of weather pattern. The more you understand that things don't necessarily occur in a vacuum and they don't necessarily occur uniquely every time. There's a pattern to things. So having those local guys, and frankly, from the city standpoint, having people who had been on the streets when those storms came through in 2004 and 2005, and even the ones recently, you know, with the rains in 2015 and 2016, everything is cumulative. So you can base your best knowledge on the best knowledge previously.
I'll tell you who became amateur meteorologists overnight. It's everybody's mother in Ohio and everybody's grandfather in Wisconsin, you know, calling and screaming and crying. See,
and those people didn't have the benefit of the local media to help put them at ease. And I give them a lot of credit because they could have very easily just concentrated on the bad stuff. But I think they were really understanding that during something like that, it's a public service. We're all public servants. And, from the Public Works Department standpoint, I think we've supported the city very well through what could have been a great crisis. Have we learned some things? Yeah. Will there be discussions about making sure that all of the lift stations have permanent backup power generators? Yeah, of course. Is it feasible? Is it possible? I don't know. But those discussions are going to be had because we saw that as a need.
And
we couldn't get our generators out to fix the situation because of the storm. So to have some sort of a contingency for that contingency may make sense.
You know, and this is sort of a tangent and this is not public works, but, you know, being in that command center, one of the scariest things to me that I didn't really want to even talk about at the time was with the 40-mile-an-hour rule, with the first responders shutting down, you essentially had lawlessness. You know, you had no power. You had everybody hunkered down, and it's someone, you know, you didn't want to draw that to people's attention in advance, but, you know, for a period of 12, 15 hours, that's what it was. Because if you needed help, no one was coming. And if there were, you know, if someone had bad intent.
There were patrols out there. There weren't a lot, but there were officers out on the road. And I don't think it happened here. I'm pretty sure it was either Fort Lauderdale or maybe it was Miami. But there was a news crew in with a sheriff's deputy, I think, on a ride-along, and they saw a bunch of kids trying to break into a Foot Locker, you know, and they found them. So, but nothing like that happened here.
Yeah. I think that's a testament to our community. I high five too. St. Pete for that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the whole area. Yeah, but St. Pete, Knock on wood, Mike. We came through this very well.
So all in all, being all things knowledge wise, public works coming through, you feel good. You'd say we had a win here, partly by dodging a bullet with the storm, but also with some good credit to preparation and planning, and we can feel good about that.
And the contingencies for the contingencies and the discussions moving forward, we're not just, okay, the storm's done, you know, let's move on. There's going to be a debrief on that and what was done well, what was done maybe not so well, what can we do better next time? And I think as those things move forward, we're going to be responsive to the people of St. Petersburg. I mean, you know this, the people in this town are not afraid to say what's on their mind, and you don't have to ask them twice for their opinion. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that not only will we have these internal conversations, what can we do better, but we are getting plenty of feedback from the stakeholders in the city, and they know the venues and mechanisms to get their thoughts to us. Big time.
and the fact that there's a looming election probably doesn't help to quell the opinions either.
You know, I understand there is an election going on. Yeah. My job is completely apolitical. I know it's been painted otherwise, but I work for the director or the administrator for Public Works Administration. That's it.
Yep.
So I was hired specifically because we had challenges in communicating what was going on in public works, and we didn't want it to become political. I'm there specifically to say, we're doing this, and here's why. We're not doing this, and here's why we're not.
Right.
And we are seeking input on how we can do this, so please tell us what you think. It's not me putting out press releases. It's really opening up a dialogue.
Right.
And if that's as simple as coming in and talking to you about this, or sitting down with somebody at lunch, or going to a neighborhood association at 6:30 on a Tuesday night and explaining some of the things that are being done to enhance resiliency moving forward. Cities are cities are cities. We've got the same problems that every other city in Florida's got. Confident that we're working on them ahead of the curve, though. And while we came out of this storm with a couple of nicks, we're not nearly as bad off as some of our neighbors. And they're going to have to address a lot of the same issues from a municipality and government leadership standpoint that St. Pete's had to deal with over the past year.
Well, I appreciate your time. It's good information. It's, you know, anytime we can get a positive report out, or, you know, just a factual report out, I think people appreciate it, and we'll do our best to get your words out there, and I appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.